Thank you very much for joining us today, Devin. And Devin began his practice with Thich Nhat Hanh's Plum Village Sangha and has been practicing insight meditation since 1999. He teaches at Insight Meditation Society, where he was trained as a residential retreat teacher. Devin has a love of long retreat practice as well as daily life practices that point to the liberative teachings of the Buddha. Devin co-founded both the Teen and Men of Color Sangha at the East Bay Meditation Center in Oakland, California. He also co-founded Deep Time Liberation, an ancestral healing journey that explores the impact of ancestral legacy and intergenerational trauma on Black Americans. Devin is a board member for Insight World Aid and Barr Center for Buddhist Studies. He recently relocated from the San Francisco Bay Area to Western Massachusetts and teaches nationally. Devin is the father of two daughters. Thank you for joining us today, Devin. Really appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Thank you. Good to be here with you all. So I wanted to offer some brief reflections on metta. And I'll say this wasn't actually the plan coming in, but I received an email late last night with the subject heading that said, why metta? And it was really late at night and I deleted the email by mistake. So I didn't actually read the email. I just saw the subject head, why metta? And I think it just must have been in my mind stream. So I have been, was thinking about it all night. And I thought about it this morning while I was out on a walk and thought, this is a good inquiry, a good piece of information for reflection. It's something I realized that I haven't actually reflected on in quite a while in my own metta practice. And then going back and looking at the email, I did in fact find from a yogi, a friend, of really wanting to know, why would he be doing this practice? Why should I do this practice? And I think for me, it had been pretty easy to answer. It was just sort of, it was that, you know, I've said over and over again, it's this, wish for goodwill and kindness for myself and for everyone else. And I think he was looking for a little more, a little more than that. And so I was just sort of going back and letting that inquiry sort of land in the body to really get a sense of what it was that has driven me to this practice or leads me to metta practice. And it is I consider it a foundational practice for myself and one that I love to share and talk about with others and encourage other folks to do. And I think it's really, it's sort of, well, actually having that why metta is, it's a really good thing just to clarify intention with any of our practices. And with metta in particular, I think clarifying the intention, the intention in metta seems to be, or at least I see it as the engine, right? So this intention is the engine that then drives the condition and action and how we engage in the world. It right, it's sort of the engine that conditions the action that colors how we engage the world. And what I've seen over the years, so there are these categories in metta oftentimes that we work with, if we work with them in a systematic way of the self, benefactor, you know, someone that is supportive of you or inspiration to you or has inspired you, mentors, teachers, that sort of thing, dear friends, the difficult person or category, those, you know, those folks that we may have a little charge with or a little difficulty or challenge with. And the neutral category. And the thing that came to mind to me most is that neutral category, those folks that I don't know. And I'll come back to those in a bit, how that was led to some pretty profound shifts in my own practice. I wanted to get to a little bit, the first thing I thought when this why metta came up is something that I've had posted on a refrigerator for years. It is in this way that we must train ourselves by liberation of the self through love. We will develop love, we will practice it, We will make it both a way and a basis, take our stand upon it, store it up, and thoroughly set it going. And that's from the Mutta Nikaya. And sort of use that as a aspiration or a little mantra to actually get back to what this practice means for me, what I'm doing with this practice. And I think my initial difficulty with metta was I had lots of blocks, and there was lots of anger and agitation and resentment. And it was the last thing I wanted to do. And of course, it was the thing that I probably most needed to do. So that's been a helpful support for me. And many of the suttas mirror. So some of what I was saying about the intention and clarifying intention and metta as a practice that conditions action and moves the heart. A lot of that is actually mirrored in the suttas. And so I wanted to look at a couple of them and actually look at the origin story of metta itself. But one of the, from the early suttas, in the way that one of the first instances that we know of metta being used or being spoken of in the suttas is also from the Samyutta Nikaya. So the monks went to the park of the wanderers of other sects. On arrival, they exchanged courteous greetings with the wanderers. After an exchange of friendly greetings and courtesies, they sat to one side. As they were sitting there, the wanderers said to them, "Friends, so Gotama, the contemplative, teaches the Dhamma to his disciples in this way, correct? Come, monks, abandoning the five hindrances, the corruptions of awareness that weaken discernment, keep pervading the first direction with awareness imbued with goodwill, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. Thus and above, below and all around, everywhere in its entirety, keep pervading the all-encompassing cosmos with an awareness imbued with goodwill, abundant, expansive, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will." So we see that as one of the early instances of the Buddha and the Buddha's disciples talking about metta and how it was practiced at that time. So there was something also that interested me early on with metta and the suttas was the origin story itself, where it's during one of the rainy seasons and there are 500 monks, 500 being lots of monks, not necessarily an exact number always, 500 monks in the forest during the rainy season. And they went to practice and had been there for a few days and all seemed to be well and they're practicing, making headway in their practice. And the tree spirits and devas and other beings in the forest at some point became a little agitated and upset because they weren't sure how long these monks were going to be staying and being there. And so as the story goes, they began emitting horrible smells and sounds and doing all sorts of things to scare the monks. And it worked. The monks were terrified and they all packed up and ran off and went to see the Buddha. And the Buddha, of course, sent them right back to the same forest. And this time he had mentioned that they were in the forest without protection. And so he sends them there with protection. And what he sends them with is the Metta Sutta. So they go back and practice. And so they're practicing Metta. They're chanting the Metta Sutta. And of course, this allows them to really settle into the practice. It settles the mind, the tree spirits, the devas, the beings, and all of these other creatures begin to see the monks as not being so mad. And they seem to also be affected by the metta that's happening. And they begin to actually support the practice that's happening. And of course, as in many of the stories in the suttas, the monks became enlightened. And so the protection that they actually sent, that the Buddha actually sent the monks with, was what we know as the Metta Sutta. And the Metta Sutta, I believe, is the only one of the Brahmaviharas, these divine abodes, one of the four Brahmaviharas, these practices of the heart, we call them in today's vernacular. It's the only one with a dedicated discourse I want to take a look at that for a second. So it says, this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. So that was the text, the crux of what the Buddha had given these monks to practice with in the forest. And when I think about, so he gave them this protection practice, right? So we often view metta as being a protection practice. And I think when I look at that inquiry of why metta, some of that is actually to be able to protect myself. It actually allows us to be with mindfulness, allows the mind to settle somewhat, and allows us to be able to release the heart, to be able to open the heart with this sense of safety that our practice helps us to cultivate. And so when I was mentioning before about the neutral category, the neutral persons and beings, I really feel like I've gotten to see quite a profound shift in social connection, actually, out and about in the world. So really taking my practice off the cushion and into the world. And so before moving to New England, I lived in San Francisco for a number of years and all over the Bay Area. And the last few years I was there before moving, I gave up my car. So I was riding Caltrains and BART and riding a bike and walking and Ubers. I spent a lot of time in Ubers back and forth to the airport and that sort of thing. And I actually used that as an opportunity to practice metta with the neutral person. So every time I got in a car, right, I was with someone that I didn't know, hadn't seen before. And what I noticed actually is oftentimes I was in the car with someone that had some piece of Buddhist iconography on the dashboard or hanging from the window or something. And so I actually used that opportunity to practice metta for them, and occasionally would mention something about the iconography that they had, the little Buddha statue or prayer flag or something. Or quite often someone would ask me, you know, where I was going when I was, you know, headed to the airport with them. And oftentimes it was to retreat. And so that led to a conversation about meditation or Buddhism and that thing. And so for a number of folks, this was, you know, what they knew from their home countries. And so it was a really beautiful connection. And what I'd seen over and over and over again is that this person that was neutral, someone that I didn't have a charge with one way or the other, that I didn't know, had never seen, oftentimes would never see again, this was someone that moved from that neutral category to the friend category, not necessarily a dear friend. In a couple of cases, Yes, but they were able to move, and it was based on this being able to settle the mind some with degrees of mindfulness and using the metta practice and actually wishing this other person goodwill and kindness and friendliness and being able to model some of that. And there were a couple of different occasions where the person that was driving me to my destination, we ended up, I stopped for coffee with one I actually invited to my house, to the surprise of everyone else in my house, for sure. And it was quite a beautiful thing to be able to pop into the back of this car with this person I'd never seen before, to be able to practice over the course of whatever that ride was, 10, 20, 30 minutes, and feel like I'd made a deep connection with this person upon getting out of the car. And I've seen that time and time again with the metta practice, not necessarily that, but it just allows me to actually, one, see the blocks that are there where I'm hesitant, or where I've created a projection or a story about someone, and also has allowed me to, as the Buddha sent the monks back into the forest with this antidote to fear, it has served as an explicit example of an antidote for fear in my own mind, dropping that into the mind stream. And so some of those are the why metta for me. And also it points to something else another beautiful part of the suttas that I love. The purpose of my teaching of the holy life of the Dharma is not for gaining merit, not for good deeds, nor rapture, nor concentration, but for the sure heart's release. This and this alone is the reason for the teachings. And as I stay close to that, and as we stay close to this aspiration of practicing for the sure heart's release, whatever the practice is, then it allows us to connect with ourselves. It allows us to connect with others around us. And I believe given the times that we're in, right, and it's going to be different in all the times, but the times that we are particularly living in, I think this is actually quite an important and quite profound thing to keep close. From the Tavija Sutta, just as if a mighty trumpeter were with little difficulty to make a proclamation to the four directions, so by this liberation of the mind through the development of loving kindness, one sets an example, leaving nothing untouched, nothing unaffected. And this really speaks to, right, the sending of the emotion of care and love in all directions. Nothing untouched, nothing unaffected, nothing out of earshot. And that helps to keep in mind that I'm not picking and choosing. And in the not picking and choosing, right, it doesn't matter. It's like white male, cis bodies, black bodies, trans bodies, queer bodies, everybody. It doesn't matter who it is, right? And at different times, metta can serve as a purification practice. So there are little blocks or little things that come up in the mind that we don't particularly like or are difficult. So it's able to point out some of those things. And as those things come up, then skillful means to be able to hold those with mindfulness and probably compassion as well. So at times it's like both of those Brahmavihara practices end up being two sides of the same coin that I often use as something difficult or challenging comes up in the mind when I'm doing metta, whether I'm doing it in a formal sense or whether I'm doing it off the cushion. And I think with the why metta as well, when I think of it now, actually quite a bit of the why is around, I used to always talk about, and I've heard the term stealth metta, right? So much of what I was talking about with the neutral person or the neutral beings was stealth metta, right? It's not me sitting on the cushion. It's not us sitting on the cushion, but it's us out and about in the world practicing metta. And I think part of the why that I'm interested in now is really blurring that line, removing that barrier of not actually there, my formal practice and my stealth metta practice being one and the same, not separating them at all. And really being able to, in the same way that we rest attention on the breath or that we rest attention on sensations, we rest attention on those phrases, rest attention on images, rest attention on the felt sense of benevolence, goodwill, kindness, friendliness. And in doing that, it really blurs the line. There isn't a separation of that practice at all. So, one other thing. So there's these 11 benefits of metta, and I believe this was later on the Suddhimagga. Roughly, I believe 500 to 1,000 years after the time of the Buddha, these 11 benefits were said. We will sleep well. We would wake up feeling well. We're not likely to have nightmares. Our body relaxes and our face is joyful. Even animals and celestial beings feel drawn to us. Spirits protect us. Fire, poison, and weapons will not harm us. The mind immediately becomes calm. Our complexion brightens. We die with a clear mind or unconfused. We'll die in peace. And I've always found those interesting. It's not so clearly there are some in there, and I'll jump to one right away that the very first time I heard it, where it's fire, poisons, and weapons will not harm us, right? That's not one to test out. So I think in my mind, I've really viewed it as looking at it in regards to greed, hatred, and delusion rather than some very explicit things. But the sleeping well and waking well is one that actually you can immediately try out and experiment with. It's one oftentimes that I use in terms of listening to the chanting of the Metta Sutta in Pali or in English, or chanting it myself. Listening to talks on the Brahma Viharas before bed. It's really interesting to see what changes occur or noticing changes the next morning and doing this over quite a bit of time, or actually being quite conscious and intentional upon waking to explore that inquiry of goodwill, friendliness, benevolence to all beings. And it seems that the more that we're able to actually string together as many moments of kindness as possible, right? Then that continuity of mindfulness is there, that continuity of metta is there. And it actually, there's a pretty profound shift that occurs, right? And that's one that you don't have to believe. That's one you try out for yourselves. So, and I'll leave you with this. This is another that has been supportive of me. Because it feels like much of what we're creating when we're creating this field of metta and working with this on a regular basis, it's sort of this, we begin to work with this soil of friendliness. And there's this beautiful poem by the 14th century Tibetan poet Longchimpa. Out of the soil of friendliness grows the bloom of compassion, watered by the tears of joy, sheltered under the cool shade of the tree of equanimity. Out of the soil of friendliness, metta, grows the bloom of compassion, karuna, watered by the tears of joy, mudita, sheltered under the cool shade of the tree of equanimity, upekkha. So holding those, that highest aspiration of wishing ourselves and others goodwill, friendliness, and kindness is the why of metta, or has been the why of metta for myself of late. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.